going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see
how it goes. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I have the great Keith Rontz on the line. Keith, how you doing, brother?
Can't complain. Nobody listens.
Yep, sounds good, man. It's how can you complain about the Loyola Ramblers? What a time to be a basketball fan in Chicago. I said, gosh, they're going to win it hopefully this year. The Bulls win it in 2020. What say you? Is that out of the realm of possibility?
I think they have a legitimate chance. They play as a team, and they got Sister Jean on their side, who I definitely think needs to be our draft lottery person.
Amen. Somehow they got to get her in the room or in the war room or even on draft night. Hopefully she'll be there giving her advice. But I tell you what, man, I don't know what you think of this tournament so far. Has anything that's happened so far changed your opinion on a few players that you were – gave your 411 on previously? Is Ayton leaving early caused you concern? You know, give us or Knox, are you still in the same area on most of these prospects, or is there any guys that you've changed your opinion on due to their performance in the tournament?
I'd say some positives, like Zaire Smith has looked intriguing.
That's Texas Tech?
Is that yes, correct? Out of Texas Tech. He was surprising in the tournament for me.
Describe him a little bit. What's his game for the people who haven't seen him?
He's a very solid two-way player. Out of the point guard prospects, he actually holds the best defensive box plus minus, and actually an overall box plus minus even greater than Trey Young's because of his ability to play both ends of the floor. He's a solid shooter. Shot a better three-point percentage than any of the other point guard prospects. He's shooting about 45% from three, and that's on it's only on about two attempts a game. So I guess that's not greatest stat considering the volume, but efficiency is there. He's more of an all-around kind of player. He's the kind of guy that you could see, you know, leading your team on both ends of the floor.
Is he projected to be available for the Pelicans pick?
He is not, depending on which draft site you're on. On Tankathon, he's moved all the way up to as far as 11.
Oh, my gosh.
No, yeah. So, depending on, you know, how the whole combine goes in Chicago for the draft and personal workouts, it should be interesting to see. But, no, they have him as the second shooting guard, point guard to go off the board after Trey Young.
Wow. So, how about Ayton's departure? I mean, you saw that game. Obviously, he seems to be, coming in now as a consensus number one overall. Are you still, bullish on him, or any of his performances cause you some concern?
None of it really concerns me, and it probably should. But what it comes down to is the one-and-done rule is getting in the way of this stuff. You could tell by the way that he reacted after Arizona got knocked out of the tournament. He really didn't care. So maybe that's a knock on his character or his mentality that, you could take a shot at him. But outside of that, I really don't see anybody else who is mind-blowing. You know, I'm going to be heartbroken if we miss this guy outside of Ayton. I think he fits perfect next to Lowry. I think the Arizona connection would be awesome. Obviously, they'd get along great. I don't think that you could go wrong with Ayton. Somebody that's a physical specimen like that, that already has the offensive skill set that he does. I think his hunger aspect of his game will change a lot as he comes into the NBA.
How about Miles and Mikal Bridges? Obviously, Miles had a disappointing ending game, did not play well, but he was fantastic in the opener for Michigan State. Mikal, I was blown away with how well he played in early on in this tournament. He had a horrible game. Not a horrible game, but he didn't have a strong game today, especially from three. But Villanova still won.
0 for 5?
Yeah, 0 for 5 from three. But Villanova still won. I've really come around on him. His length is so – he's got tremendous length. Very good defensively. He had foul trouble today, which I think also kind of affected his game somewhat. But I'm a big fan of his and that Villanova team overall. Which one of those two are you higher on, and which one would you rather see the Bulls get?
Oh, that one's tough for me because I think I'd like Knox out of the three, and I know you think I'm crazy for that.
I do.
Statistically, Knox is, you know, doesn't really stand out in any of the categories. I think he actually may be the worst out of the three in all categories, but he has the most size. The kid's got character, work ethic. He's 6'9". He's going to be 18 on draft night. He's a full year at least younger than every other small forward prospect. He'll be 19 years old his whole entire first NBA season. I just think that kid has a higher ceiling than the other two. Mikal has definitely been the standout for the tournament of me, even coming into the tournament. The five games prior to that, he was shooting lights out, doing amazing things. Ultimately, his size is my concern. I see Justin Holiday. I see, you know, that kind of frame scares me. He's a tweener. He's not a true small forward. He's a shooting guard small forward, and he does have the exceptional length, which should allow him to play that position in the NBA, but that frame just scares me.
I think he looks bigger than Holiday. I think he'll grow up. He'll grow into that a little more than Holiday does.
But that's the thing. He's already 22. He's already got his grown man body. He's going to look like Brandon Ingram, but 6'7" for the rest of his life.
Yeah, but I mean, I hear that too. But you got to remember, he's a part time basketball player now. He's also a college athlete. He's still going to school. When you start doing this full time and really get in the weight room full time, and you're able to really to truly devote yourself to your craft, which he hasn't been able to do, I think that comes along a little bit. I don't think he looks that small. You're saying you think he's going to have Holiday strength issues?
I'm saying that I don't think he's going to be the small forward that we need that's going to be able to stop LeBron's or guard Ben Simmons or those kind of guys. I don't see that there. I see him more as fitting in the Justin Holiday role where, you know, he can play the small forward, but realistically you want somebody that's bigger. Obviously his length is ridiculous, but then you look at Tony Snell. Did Tony Snell work out for us? Yeah, we traded Tony Snell away. So I don't know. I kind of fall into that category where his frame, his size, his fit as a small forward in the NBA concerns me. I don't have that concern with Miles. Miles has the size. He has the skill sets. Pretty much I see Mikal as a Tony Snell kind of prospect. I see Miles Bridges as a Tobias Harris-like prospect, and I see Kevin Knox, and I see a potential Kelly Oubre-like prospect. And out of the three, I'd want Kelly Oubre. I like the size. I like his length. I think he has plenty of room to grow into his game. His off-the-floor character is amazing, and his work ethic is astonishing. I think he reminds you of, I don't want to say crazy things and get a whole bunch of flack for it, but he reminds me of a Greek freak-like prospect that can shoot. He's just got that kind of size, that kind of athleticism, and that kind of potential in my mind.
Did you lose any – where are you falling on Sexton? I don't know about you, but I lost a little bit, and now that I had a chance to really watch his game, I don't think he's uber athletic enough at the point guard position or a great enough shooter and not, you know, strong enough with the ball to demand a top 10 pick. I'm not as high as I once was on him. What's your take on Colin Sexton, who – seems to be pretty high still in most mock drafts?
He's got that edge. You know, he plays with that Westbrook edge. He's the kind of guy that isn't the greatest shooter, but once he gets in a groove and he gets himself going, he's unstoppable. And those kind of guys are scary to pass on because the players that play like that tend to practice like that and work at their game like that, and they tend to make tremendous leaps for the Bulls. You know how much of a Chris Dunn guy I am, and I don't see the point of drafting a point guard top 10. If we're not drafting a player that we see as the center of our future or an athletic wing to fill the holes that we really need, I think we're wasting our pick in the top 10.
Yeah, agreed there. Because I mean, there's good enough players. I will be disappointed they go with Sexton and you know, ahead of one of the Bridges or some other options that will be there. Who knows, Jaren Jackson, who hopefully if he falls to us. Speaking of that, let's move to a different topic. The beloved Bull have really embraced the tank and are on a downward trend, without a doubt. I don't think Dunn will play. He shouldn't play for the rest of the season. It looks like they're probably going to sit also LaVine. Markkanen is getting some time, but what do you feel realistically, looking at the remaining schedule for the teams in front of them? I mean, I know we have two games with the Nets. Those are both must-lose. Can we get to five? Is that possible? What realistically, where do you think we're going to end up?
Realistically, I think we finish six or seven. By the numbers right now, we really could make it all the way up to fourth. But the Nets can't close a game to save their life. They've been leading going into the fourth or the whole entire game into the fourth so many nights as of late, and they can't finish. They go stone cold, and they can't close the game. Now, Dallas plays a very easy schedule the rest of the way. They have more easy games than they do hard, and the same thing for Orlando. Orlando has five against tanking teams and then one against Charlotte. So I think Orlando is very possible to pass. The Kings that we're currently tied with now, they play the Suns, the Grizzlies, Dallas, and the Lakers are their easiest remaining games. I think they can win a couple of those.
Suns, Grizzlies. Yeah, they can win both of those. And then we're right there with them, right? You said the Kings.
We're already tied with Sacramento. So they win, two or three games here, and they'll be way ahead of us. I am concerned about passing the Nets. I do think if we drop both, that should put us ahead of them. But I kind of feel that we're going to steal one of those games.
Gosh, what a pathetic franchise. What a pathetic team that you have no incentive to suck like this, and you're still just losing.
Well, no, and that's the thing. Their roster isn't even that bad. They have several good young players, and they can't finish games. They're in all of them, and they lead most of them, but they just can't close.
Yeah, what's bothering me, too, I mean, some of these teams, I know, I think it's close enough now that most of the good teams aren't going to rest their guys. But that's another concern is, you know.
Well, no, you saw what happened with Curry. There might be a lot of teams that decide to rest their players because of that.
Exactly. So, I mean, you could see the Bulls stumbling to a victory against a team, you know, that's good. I mean, we're looking, you know, out, and we see, well, these are losses, right, especially the next couple games for the Bulls. But you never know if teams are sitting guys like this, you know, you could stumble into a victory or two. I just hope, you know, I did lose a little bit of sleep with the realization that, you know, he's playing Lopez and Holiday again, and I don't understand that. I mean, these guys are going to – if you keep on playing those guys, we're gonna get out a win out of there. You know, so we'll see what happens, but I am a little concerned about – Fred needs to understand the message here that we got to close with Felicio. We got to close with our worst players because
– Well, against Detroit, Holiday and Rolo didn't play after the half. I think games against teams that are of higher quality – that there's no way that we should win unless they rest their players. We will see Holiday and Rolo, at least in the first quarter, maybe the first half, because we need to stay in the game. If we're blatantly losing games and they're sitting on the bench and they're not playing and they're inactive and we lose by like 60 points like Memphis did,
yes,
that's a problem. So I understand your frustration and your concern with them playing, but I see why they're playing. It's to keep the first quarter close. It's to keep it close at the half. And then, you know, from there we can deploy our tank commanders and see what happens. But what have you thought about Payne?
Yeah, I've been very impressed with him. So I sent out a poll. I don't know if you saw that bullseye poll I sent out with. And assuming that you can't get another backup point guard, who do you prefer, Cameron Payne or Jerian Grant? Cameron Payne won 79-21, which is a testament to how much this guy's turned around. I mean, I think Cameron Payne, I've never seen more people be down on a player than he was before the season started. And I think he's been he clearly is a better facilitator for other players than Jerry.
When he decides to be a facilitator, though, that's the thing. Because the last game against Detroit, he kind of reverted back to his hero ball ways and was trying a little too hard to get his own instead of getting his teammates involved. But when he does make it a priority, yes, he does seem like a better facilitator. I've actually seen some entry pass posts, post passes that we haven't seen a good amount of the year. So, no, I would definitely take Payne over Grant, but I have a feeling that it'll come down to if they can get anything for either of them on draft night, even a second for the future, just to clear that roster spot and not have to waive them and have that go against the cap.
Mm. Well, I definitely feel that Payne's also kind of developed a rapport with Felicio. Felicio hasn't looked like a total waste of a, you know, breath, you know, waste of space recently. He's actually, I mean, he still sucks, and he's still, I think, a bad basketball player, but you're starting to see at least some progress and some improvement. And, you know, that kind of the thing he does quasi well, which is the attack the basket and then get the you know, dunk, pass and dunk. He's kind of developed that, I think, Payne and Felicio. That was non-existent since Wade left. I mean, you feel the same way that Felicio's looked a little bit better?
Oh, no, I think statistically-wise, he might even be averaging a double-double the last four or five games. But he's still extremely uncoordinated, undersized, seems lost all the time. So I guess he's playing like he's worth about $2 million worth of his eight per at this point. But it is better than nothing. It is beneficial for what we need right now, and it gives us a very valid excuse why this guy is out on the floor.
I asked this question to Doug Tonis on the Big Red Bus earlier today, and I'd love to hear your take on this, on David Nwaba, who's an interesting player for the Bulls, obviously had a nice year this year, and I hope he's a part of our future. But the question is, if he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, how much would you pay for David Nwaba?
He's a restricted free agent.
Oh, he is. Oh, good. I was on
board. Yes. No, he is restricted. So we can match anything. I think I'd match anything up to about five per.
Yep.
I'd be all for David on a 4 for 20 kind of deal. Obviously, something cheaper than that would be better. But I think five per I'd go up to. I think he definitely belongs on this team. I think just his work ethic, his character, his energy that he brings on the floor is infectious for the rest of the team, and having that around the team is definitely a positive.
No, I agree. He does a couple of things really well, which the team is in sore need of. Free throw attempts, attacks the rim, gets to the line. Doesn't shoot it well at the line, though. I mean, there's always like the counter with him, and I know he's shooting threes at a 36% rate, but very low attempts, you know, so that could be fool's gold. But he is great defensively, and he plays with a tremendous amount of effort. I want to see him off the bench next year. I don't think he's a starter. I think he's like a 6th, 7th, 8th guy along with Valentine. But he could definitely be a nice piece on a playoff team. So, I mean, I'm excited to see what happens with him. Another topic that we debated quite a bit, and I'd love your opinion on, is Zach LaVine. Restricted free agent. Has his disappointing play caused you to reevaluate how much you would offer for him with the Chicago Bulls?
My only concern with LaVine is what offers he may bring in from other teams. And given his production and the showing that he put on the floor with whatever's going on tendonitis-wise in his knee, whether that's legitimate or it's, you know, fabricated to keep him off the floor, that's something we may not ever fully know for sure. But I think it works in their favor. I mean, I'd like to see them lock him up 5 for 15 each. I think that's middle of the road. That's less than Tim Hardaway Jr. makes. That's less than Kent Bazemore makes. I think this opportunity should be used to sign him long term. I do think Zach's work ethic is going to turn this around. I do think he will be a fairly different player next year. Obviously, that is a big gamble, but it's also a big gamble to either give him his qualifying offer or give him a lesser, shorter deal, and then he becomes an unrestricted free agent, and you lose him to somebody else because you messed around and you pissed him off. And then he leaves, and then we're out.
But, you know, teams don't have any cap space. Who's going to give a max deal for Zach LaVine? No one.
Lakers
is.
Might. Lakers are desperate. Lakers are going to have a good amount of money. There's plenty of teams that will do it just to mess with us, to force us into a situation similar to the Nets did to the Wizards. You know, they got Otto Porter Jr. on a max contract. That's insane.
Yeah, but there was a lot more teams at that time with max, with cap space. And there's just such a limited amount this year that, and I think a team would be nuts, even like the Lakers. Maybe you are right on that one. But I think even the Lakers have bigger plans for next year for Jimmy Butler. You know, LeBron is still in play. I think all those are options 1A, 1B, 1C. Paul George, LeBron James, Jimmy Butler next year. All those three, I think, would be ahead of Zach LaVine. And signing him to a max deal, I wonder how that would be received in Los Angeles.
Well, no, and that's the point that I'm getting at. Is as frustrating as, you know, Zach's ups and downs and his poor shot selection and poor facilitating at times. I have seen flashes of where he can be a great facilitator, too. So it's very rough. He's been put in a situation that's damn near impossible to excel in. You know, he came back, Dunn was out. So he had the team. He had the role that he thought he was going to have as the go-to guy at all times. And then Dunn comes back, and Dunn's like, hey, man, I earned that while you were sitting on the bench. I'm not just handing those keys over to you. And you throw the Bulls trying to lose in the middle of there. And how good do you expect a guy to play when Felicio's his starting center? So there's too many factors. So I think, like I said, I would try to take advantage of his poor showing and the poor market and everything that is working in their favor to get him on a long-term deal. And then, you know, if he only becomes Bazemore kind of shooting guard and maybe he's a six man instead of a starter, that's still not a horrible contract, and you have him locked in for a long time. He could become a valuable trade chip if you don't feel that he fits with the continuity of the team long term.
Yeah, good points, all good points. It'll be interesting to see. I am not for giving him a max deal. I don't think he is absolutely. I mean, I think if someone offers him a max deal, I think you have to think long and hard about letting him walk and being happy with Ori and Dunn as the results of that trade. I think that's enough for Jimmy Butler, and, you know, basically tank this season. Whatever draft pick we end up with, I think that's good enough to move forward. But overpaying for LaVine on a max deal, you know, 25-ish a year.
No, I don't think he should get over a penny over 18. I might, you know, cave on like 19. But with bird rights, his contract's going to go up every year. So if we start him at...
One more question. If he takes a qualifying offer, this is something I should have known beforehand. I don't. Let's assume he does that, which is a possibility. He's made a ton of money with the shoe deal he has right now at Adidas. If he doesn't like what the Bulls are selling and he doesn't see anything on the open market that you know gets him going, if he takes that qualifying offer, can the Bulls, do they still have an advantage at the end of the year to sign
him?
No,
they don't. He would be an unrestricted free agent, similar to Nerlens Noel turning down the contract with the Mavericks and having to take his lesser offer.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of situation that I'm avoiding, is I do think Zach has it in there. He's a 23-year-old kid. He didn't have an offseason. Hasn't been in the system. He's on a new team. He's got a new coach. The only thing familiar is Chris Dunn, and it's not like him and Chris played very much together. But from Mark Schanowski's interview with the Big Three, Chris and Zach have talked about busting their butts together in the offseason. I think our team's going to transform over the offseason. I think it's very, very, very hard to judge just about anything outside of, you know, campaign and blatantly obvious progress from players, because you're setting them up to fail. So when they fail, you're getting what you want, but you're not seeing what you want.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, that's one factor that's not really brought up, is we traded Nico shortly after LaVine came back, and we saw a glimpse of his abilities. And to me, the biggest thing about this year is he physically back. I think he proved that. And then he looked great against Minnesota. You know, he had some moments.
That Minnesota game, that was outside of him being healthy at the end of the year. That's what I needed to see.
So
big game.
Doug would counter.
Biggest thing.
Yeah. Doug Tonis would counter that he's never had a PER, even with Minnesota, over 15. And you shouldn't be paying max deals for guys who without the proven, you know, max.
And I don't think he'll get the max, though.
I agree. That's my counter, too.
I can't, you know, I won't debate that. Yeah, if he's not, you know, reaching the level of a max player, you don't pay him as a max player just because that's what he thought he was coming into the year. But that's where I fall, and I think as horrible as he's looked at times, that this situation falls right into the front office's hands. I'm sure they're doing a happy dance.
I don't know. You never know what his agent is telling Zach, that he deserves a max deal. And, you know, we'll see how he responds. But I agree with you. I think 18 is fair, even with the overall disappointing performance and his limited, you know, viewing we've seen. Doug says not a penny over 15. You know, we'll see.
Hopefully, which, I mean, in a perfect world, I agree with. But at the end of the day, he is a 23-year-old. Adidas gave him a big deal because they see what he can be. They see the kind of marketability and all that. And I do think he can evolve into something big on this team.
Amen.
He's got it. He's got the skill set. He's got the first step. Obviously, defense is a concern, but that's more awareness. It's hard to judge that and expect him to make major improvements when you're putting lineups on the floor that are supposed to be defensively inept. So, I don't know. It is a very tough situation. 18 would be my max number, but I have no problem giving him a long-term deal as long as they don't have any health concerns. If this tendonitis in his knee is, you know, fabricated to give them an excuse to keep him off the floor and they've already had, you know, minor talks behind the doors, hey, we're paying you, don't worry about it, just sit out the rest of the year.
Yeah, that sounds good, my man. I agree. All right, brother. Hey, we've already almost had a half an hour, so we're going to wrap this baby up. Really appreciate you jumping on Chicago Bullseye. Anything to look forward to, look for in the next week? What are you looking for when you're watching these games?
It's hard to even watch at this point.
I agree.
When Lowry's not on the floor, you know, I'm kind of just perusing Twitter with my minor attentiveness on the screen.
Well, Valentine's worth watching. He's been putting up some numbers.
Valentine's been all right. I thought it was funny. Hoiberg didn't even remember what game Denzel went off during when he was asked by the media. He had to look at the media and ask them, what game was that? So
yeah.
that kind of tells you where Fred's head is right now. He's probably just so done with this season.
Yeah, understandably. 100% understandably. I agree, too, and I'm done with it, too. I cannot wait till it's over, and hopefully we'll slide right into 5-4. I mean, goodness gracious, can you imagine they have to get 4? But so, if they can they just got to get past the Nets. I mean, that's like we need their help, obviously. The two games there, those are huge. When's that Nets game? Is that this week?
No, they're at the end of the season. We actually play them back-to-back.
Yeah.
I believe it's 4-7 and then maybe 4-9. So April 7th and April 9th, I could be wrong. That's just off the top of my head.
Yep. Well, let's see what happens, and hopefully things will fall our way. Maybe we can see some other surprises as some really bad teams get a couple wins coming up. But, hey, man, as always, always enjoyable to talk to you. Let's enjoy the tournament. Touch base again next Sunday after the Final Four, and we'll have a lot more to talk about then. So, as always, all the best to you, Keith.
Yep, take it easy, boss.
All right, man. Have a good one. Bye-bye.